Alan, you've been a journalist here in this region for a very long time. You've seen it before the handover, and you're here in this region professionally, but also for personal reasons. And I also want to mention that this is being tweeted live. Hashtag PressHK for those of us who are not in this room. It is being tweeted right now, being reported as we speak online. So, Alan?
Thank you. I've been a journalist since 1987, but even before that, I came to Hong Kong as an intern, and I was one of the fans of Ms. Claudia Mo. She was a very famous anchor at TVB, both for the Pearl and the J Channel, and I was just a young intern on the Pearl side. So I'm really very much privileged tonight, sitting next to her, sitting next to Ms. Mock and Mr. Albert, and I'm very sorry that he left. But anyway, I've observed Hong Kong for a long, long time, and I just want to give a very quick historical and political social perspective of the bigger picture of what I've seen over the past 25, 30 years. Hong Kong has been at the crossroads between East and West for basically almost 200 years. Even as early as the 1930s and 40s, leftist-leaning newspapers such as the Dai, Gongbo, and Wenweibo began setting up in Hong Kong with funding from the Communist Party of China, which was then waging a war against the Kuomintang-led government of China. Back then, these two newspapers were minority voices here in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong was back then dominated by a forest of newspapers, dominated by pro-Western, pro-KMT, pro-industrialist voices. But though the KMT lost the Civil War in 1949 and fled to Taiwan, the Nationalist Party continued to fund many newspapers in Hong Kong. And among them was Gongsan Yebo and Hong Kong Sibo. And they lasted for decades in Hong Kong. They were very anti-China. The Hong Kong Times, for instance, the Hong Kong Sibo, didn't cease publishing until 1993, and for decades was staunchly anti-communist. Anything and everything about communist world China was bad, according to these newspapers' articles. Okay, but even mainstream newspapers, all the way through the 1980s, early 90s, such as Xindao Yebo and Mingbo, where a lot of their editorial content was very anti-China. However, all these anti-communist voices began to switch sides. And beginning in the run-up to 1997, and they switched completely after 1997, as Albert and Smock and Claudia said, many of their bosses became members of the CPPCC as well as the MPC, and they became part of the privileged class. Okay? My point is this: if you step back and look at the bigger picture of the political environment, self-censorship are taking an ideological stance of being against the Communist Party, are for it, and therefore choosing to accentuate certain points while ignoring others. This has been in practice in Hong Kong for decades and is nothing new and is in fact not rising. Okay, this is my point of view, so you can debate with me later. But what I'm saying is what is changing, however, is that Hong Kong has become inextricably caught up in the tidal wave of factional conflicts over the direction of reforms that have swept across China in the past 30 years. The party has pushed for rapid economic reforms in the past 30 years, but when it comes to political reforms, the pace has been at a snail's pace. The question today is when and in what form will faster political reforms take place in China? That's a critical issue for every one of us sitting here, particularly in Hong Kong. Factions within the party are waging quietly but very voracious warfare behind the scenes over this topic, and their infighting is spilling even into the newsroom in Hong Kong. And that's why we're seeing this huge concern about self-censorship in Hong Kong. Though the party's department of propaganda continues to issue edicts of state-controlled media not to publish certain things or to publish certain things, we can see, however, that even within China, there are signs of openness within the large population seeking to publish their own views. And we can see China's internet portals, especially Sina Weibo. We can see that they are teeming with lively disclosures of news that the party doesn't want released. News released by more than 300 million registered users. And these netizens are telling us, for example, which officials are siphoning off the most state funds, which officials have the largest number of concubines. Photos are of these officials that they are caught, you know, in action, okay, as they say in Latin, in flagrante delicto, as they say in Chinese, cao fan. They are appearing on the Weibo every second, okay? And of course, the party, through their large armies of censors, they are deleting this, but it's difficult to do. It's difficult to do, and by the time they delete these comments and these photos, millions of people have already seen them, okay? So basically, if you really want to read scandalous copy from China, you just don't read the Apple Daily, don't read the SCMP summary, read the Weibos of China. But you need to watch them every single second. There's a lot of stuff that's coming out on there. The downfall of Bo Xilai and his wife Bo Kailai really began as Weibo news streams. And this was the first streams came out when Bo's former security chief Wang Lijun fled to the U.S. consulate in Chengdu. News of this started coming out through the Chinese news streams on Weibo, and it was only after days that reporters, domestic and foreigners, caught this. This is how it came out. Okay? Now, try as it will, the party cannot control this, and so, because there are 400 million people who have internet access in China, they want to express themselves, and they are. Okay? So basically, what we have today is, you know, there is a huge demand for information, and if they're not getting it from the traditional media, the netizens are going out and getting it themselves, and they're passing it out. So it is in this background that we see the Hong Kong's rising state of quote-unquote of self-censorship. Okay, China, however, in my opinion, is again at a crossroads. 30 years of economic reforms have brought a tremendous success. But that success, which was driven and built on export-driven economy, which Hong Kong played a gargantuan role in, as the financial center for Greater China region, it's no longer sustainable, the export model. Okay? So even within the party, reformists are pushing for more openness, more reforms, including political reforms, because they know that current system as it is now, it's not going to go on and bring sustainable growth forever. They realize they must accelerate reforms. But how, when, at what pace, there's a big debate going on. Okay? If you step back and look at the big picture, you will see the Hong Kong is caught in the midst of this struggle, and that the so-called rise of self-censorship in Hong Kong is just symptomatic of the greater forces that are pulling at China today. My conclusion is that there is no question that China is at crossroads of major change. Okay? How Hong Kong positions itself and how successful it is in managing all these different ideological currents may well determine whether Hong Kong's influence in China rises or falls in the years ahead. And that ultimately is in the hands of all of you in determining the success of one country, two systems. Can Hong Kong preserve its two systems? I think that ultimately is the issue here tonight. Thank you.
I want to open it up to questions in the audience. If you have any questions, want to go ahead?
Certain newspapers were fed certain things by the opposition camps and so on. So maybe by Yinting, you can answer this question first. I mean, this reporting done around the time of the election, did you see that as evidence for optimism about Hong Kong quality, the quality of Hong Kong's journalism?
Actually, I'm quite unhappy with the report during the chief executive campaign. Well, of course, Hong Kong do not have law to prohibit what you cannot say or you cannot say. So what you do is to use the quote unquote freedom to feed you the information. And I don't be that naive to saying that we don't need that kind of information. Of course, information is the butt line of media. We rely on that. But the point is, whenever you get the information, you have to cross-check it, and you have to put it in a more in an objective way. But during the campaign, what I see is that media has been used, and I would say most of the information have finally proved to be true. But during the the presentation of the information, I'm sadly find that the so-called neutral newspaper has been very biased toward one particular candidate. Well, the fact is that I think Ming Pao, the chief editor of Ming Pao, has been explained twice that they are very neutral, independent, and reporting on the good of Hong Kong people. But the point is, if you are really neutral and no complaint has been received, why you have to explain twice? And you even call some scholar. As far as I know, they have called several political academy and together and trying to say how do you see the days afterwards, and how do you, of course they will say how the news reporting of, and then actually, as far as I know, at least one academic have told them they are very disappointed on the reporting of Ming Pao. And then you will find that you were quite astonished. So it's very strange that afterwards, especially during the illegal construction of the new executive, I think Ming Pao is doing very good on that. And you will say, what happened? It seems
but
that
I am rather uncomfortable about your line that the media were being used at the time. A story is a story. Whether the information came from political snitches or through investigative journalism, it's still a story, right?
No. As I
have to be fair to Ming Pao.
But Claudia, as I said, I have agreed that media rely on information, and our role is to cross-check it and present it in an objective way. What I'm now complaining, especially Ming Pao, is that they pretend to be neutral, but as a matter of fact, when you look into the content of the report, I don't think it is neutral. That is the problem.
Well, that's very subjective, though.
That is a subjective.
Well, you can
to the reader.
I'm not only pointing at one article, and I talked to the colleagues inside Ming Pao, and I have this conclusion. You can say
it's good insight. Thank you for sharing. More questions from the group?
Hi, I'm Toh Han Chi, a reporter from the South China Morning Post. There's been a lot of talk about South China Morning Post being very timid and pandering to Beijing and having self-censorship. But as a reporter of the South China Morning Post, I like to ask people what they think of the recent coverage of the Ferrari car crash in Beijing, which embarrassed Chinese President Hu Jintao and his aide, Would you not argue that that's an example of a brave and independent report?
I love it. I simply love your coverage of that story.
That's an example of, I think, Shan Wei trying to make the paper. and I have to applaud him for his efforts, because I also worked at SCMP many years ago. And he really cares about journalism. But the reality is when you're in a senior position, perhaps, there are other considerations. There are different forces pulling at you, different forces. And so the recent coverage should be applauded more.
Paul, do you want to get in there?
Yeah, I would also say, well, okay, you give one example, but what about all the other things that are not reported? Also, is there a political motivation for reporting on? Wong Chung-hae himself has written positive stories about Sheila and I. Is it really brave reporting, or is it some kind of manipulation of the news? That's my question.
You better reply to that.
You're welcome to. Would you like to?
I'm not going to comment directly on SCMP or Wang Xiangwei, but in my opinion, when there's more open and democratic struggle between the different factions within the Chinese Communist Party, that will create more press freedom because different factions will support different newspapers, so you have a greater variety of views.
Well, the question is some faction supporting the China Morning Post?
Well, I think it is, we all know that reporters inside one organization is not a flat, you know. We, as Claudia have said, journalists are not trying to practice self-censorship. His editor sometimes, after several incidents, then you know, learn to be behaved. That is the way. So, and
domesticated is the word.
Thanks. And as a matter of fact, that's the conclusion I made after I used the Ming Pao case. Actually, when, you know, after CY had been elected, there are more, bad news for CY came out from Ming Pao, and they do a very good job. That is because reporters are different. You know, they always find a way how to get their story out. So when control is more stringent, then you see the another face. But when the string, the control are loosened, reporters or even the middle range of reporters will come in and they will get the story out.
We have a question in the middle here.
Yes.
Ma'am?
Hello. Oh, it's on. Now I'll talk into it, I hope, better than Alan. Alan, talking to the mic. Two comments. Thank you so much. Claudia, I haven't met you before, but thank you for that comment on ATV. I do not speak Cantonese. I speak a little Putonghua, but I do not speak Cantonese. But I was here the other night, and I was watching ATV on the screen above the kitchen door, and I could see that they were photographing, videoing the protest, and they showed about 25 people. And I could tell right then that that was a sham. That was just a sham. Now, I've never caught ATV before, because I can't speak Chinese, so I can't tell how prevalent that is.
Complaining.
But no, it was really quite shocking. And Alan, I had a question for you. Thank you for being so positive in your thinking that China is going to change gradually, another 100 years, do you think? Yes, Weibo is important, and yes, 300 million people chattering online, being censored every minute, is important, but we're dealing with Hong Kong, and we're dealing with self-censorship, and we're dealing with the people who have pressure on them today. So I appreciate the long view, but I really don't think that answers the question. What can we do today in Hong Kong to stop editors, reporters, publishers, and Albert Chang's backers from backing off from the truth, you know? I'm with Albert. I think that digital radio is very important. We need more voices out there. RTHK has been going on for far too long. And we need more radio stations, because radio is pretty insidious, you know, it gets everywhere. You don't have to have newspapers, you know, you hear it in the air. So is there a comment you'd like to make in the main about how can Hong Kong hang on to 2047?
I think the very fact that we're even having this forum is a part of the process of Hong Kong citizens taking their own destiny into their own hands. And people are speaking up. People are making this major issue. And the more people talking about this, the more this will bounce back to Beijing. And the more they're going to realize, the more you put pressure on Hong Kong, the more it's going to backfire. So I think that's the key, is Hong Kong people need to take this into their own hands. They need to grab their own destiny and say, We are, yes, one country, but we have to preserve two systems.
Don't you detect inertia?
Do I detect what?
Inertia.
I detect in Hong Kong that there's tremendous resistance from being told what to do, and people will put up with it for a while, but eventually they will not put up with it. Just like, for example, Article 23, people did not put up with that.
Yay!
And
national education.
And national education.
Brainwashing, I beg
of you. We recognize it.
Paul, what's your take on that? Are you optimistic that at some point the tide is going to turn because we're talking about it, and that might pave the way for more voices like yours to be out there, express itself, and be published?
Well, that's the question. I don't live in what the reaction is. Do Hong Kong papers care more about Beijing, or do they care about what Hong Kong readers say? Right now, my feeling is that they're more leaning towards Beijing. I just wonder, what can Hong Kong do to kind of stop this trend?
We have time for one more question out there. Anybody want to ask one final question? I want to thank you all, including Albert. Unfortunately, he censored himself by leaving. And it really detracted.
That's quite an oxymoron.
Yes, but it detracted from what we were trying to do tonight, and which I feel we've achieved, which is a very vibrant and lively and at times controversial conversation about the state of media here in Hong Kong and ergo China. As Alan said, are we a proxy for what's happening between East and West? And I think for all of us who have lived here, who continue to arrive here, that's a conversation that will continue. And I invite all of us, all of you out there, to continue this conversation. We have a networking session privately, and you can talk with our panelists for the next 45 minutes. And I welcome that. But on behalf of FCC and AAJA Asia, I really want to thank you all for being here tonight and taking time out. Mr. Paul Mooney in Beijing joining us with Skype, Ms. Maggie Chang, Hong Kong Girls Association, Claudia Mao, Alan Chang. Thank you so much. And thank you for Albert Chang as well for sharing his thoughts. So thank you all for joining, and we'll keep talking. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm so excited tonight to see all of you run through a torrential downpour and get to FCC nice and dry. You've got a drink in your hand, a nice warm seat, and get ready for some lively conversation. My name is Angie Lau. I am a markets reporter for Bloomberg, but more importantly tonight, I'm a member of AAJA Asia Chapter and also a correspondent board member here at the Foreign Correspondents Club of Hong Kong. And it is those both roles that I'm honored and privileged to be moderating this very important panel that we're holding tonight. It came about really as a conversation not only at the FCC, but also AAJA Asia, Asian American Journalists Association. The concern was what is happening amongst our colleagues and the voices of our press here in Hong Kong. And so through a lot of hard work, including Stephanie Chin, member of Hong Kong Journalists Association here, along with a lot of other members of AAJA Asia, and very supporting board group at FCC, I present to you this panel tonight, Pressure on the Press, the State of Self-Censorship, Hong Kong, 15 years after the handover. It's an important conversation because we've seen what's been happening. FCC actually joining with Beijing, Shanghai, and here in Hong Kong, issuing a joint statement concerned about the violence against international journalists reporting in and on China. And up here on stage, we have representing some of the most lively voices of what's happening right now. Mr. Albert Cheng, DBC founder. Ms. Mak Ying Tang, chairperson, HKJA. Claudia Mo, longtime journalist, friend. And Alan Cheng, institutional investor, but a longtime journalist in Asia. So we also have Paul Mooney, who's joining in on this conversation as well from Beijing via Skype. So if we could dial him in. Paul Mooney is a journalist, longtime journalist, and most recently, vocal critic of his former employer, the South China Morning Post. So he is joining us tonight as well. Paul, welcome. We can see you. Thank you for joining us tonight. I'd like to start the conversation off with Ms. Mak. And as a chairperson for the Hong Kong Journalists Association, what are you seeing on the ground? What's happening? What's happening with our colleagues?
Well, basically, unfortunately, I have to start with a grimy future because according to this consecutive survey conducted by the Hong Kong Journalists Association, the press freedom in Hong Kong actually deteriorated because in year 2007, we conducted a survey and 58.4% saying that press freedom eroded in a decade after the handover. And then we conduct another survey this year and found that more people, that is 86.9% saying that press freedom eroded significantly under Donald Trump's administration, namely from year 2005 to year 2012. So from the time span, you can see that from handover onward, the press freedom has been deteriorated continuously. And the percentage felt that Hong Kong press freedom eroded is on the rise. That is almost 30 percentage point higher compared with those we conducted in year 2007. And one of the main reasons, of course, is the self-censorship, which HKJ has long been complained of and would like the industry to aware of that and to stand firm, not to practicing self-censorship. But regrettably, the recent survey we conducted, we still find that almost 36% admitted that they have committed, practicing self-censorship. They have practicing self-censorship, and also this is not a low percentage. And take into consideration that it is not a socially desirable act. So you can for sure saying that the real situation is more severe than the percentage point show. And also, actually, more people feel that, I mean in the industry, saying feel that the self-censorship in Hong Kong is on the rise. And in the recent survey, find that almost 80% saying that the press, the self-censorship is on the rise. So it's extremely high percentage point of will. And you will wonder why it came from. Of course, it has a long history, including the imbalance of political sphere in Hong Kong when all the pro-Taiwan newspaper moved out from Hong Kong in the early 90s. And then the central government trying to incorporate the media owner into their establishment. For example, in year 2000, you can see that the boss of Tsingtao Daily have been appointed to as the standing committee of the CPPCC, and also even the most popular newspaper in Hong Kong, that is the Oriental Daily News, the boss was also became the member of the CCPCC, that is the Consultative Conference of Political
Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference.
Yeah, anyway, we are political wars to me. But anyway, still quite a lot of people trying to, you know, squeeze in and trying to, so that they can pat the shoulder of the leaders. Well, that is some media owners did. And we have a rough calculation and find that over half of the boss of the media organizations has been either appointed to this establishment of China, including the National People's Congress, or been appointed, you know, giving medal by the Hong Kong government. So you can see that the why the press, why the self-censorship environment is, you know, more tend to pro-establishment. Of course, especially pro-Beijing and even pro-Hong Kong government. And this things happen more and more, actually. I would say especially the liaison office of the central government in Hong Kong has been more and more significant. And, you know, I can assure you some electronic media or even some newspaper, they almost receive daily calls from officials in the liaison office. And in recent electoral election, newspapers, and of course they are not the junior one like us, not like us, like me. You know, the deputy chief editor or the chief editor will receive calls from even He Tiechuan, the director of the propaganda department in the liaison office, and telling them that, have you received my email? And those email are either some smearing material for certain candidates or what. And of course, he will not, you know, saying that if you don't print it, you will face what kind of penalty. But down in your heart, you know there will be something wrong or there will be some trouble if you don't. So most of the time, I think their desire will be realized, and you will see it on the newspaper the next day. And this is more frequent during the electoral campaign. And whether you say that it is self-censorship or it is under pressure, sometimes it's very hard to draw the line. But that is the real situation of Hong Kong now. And more regrettably, apart from the bad environment, the Hong Kong government is stepping in. We find that regrettably, in the survey we conducted in year 2007, people in the industry saying that the prime reason for the deterioration of press freedom is self-censorship. But this year, we find that the percentage saying, pointing finger at Hong Kong government tightening the grip of flow of information being the prime reason for the deterioration of press freedom. And it is no doubt, because actually it's quite visible already. JA have been pointed out in, I think, 2 to 3 years ago. But at that time, there are quite a lot of maybe disagreement from the industry, but more and more they agree with us and find that very intolerable. I just give you a very very recent example. And actually, the chief secretary Carrie Lam has been questioned in the radio program because we accusing them. Actually, they are trying to make. Not smearing, but they're trying to using political cosmetic to squeezing out the anti-voice of the opposition of the
national
education.
Brainwashing education.
Yeah, the alleged brainwashing education. And I give you a real example. Although Mrs. Carrie Lam just reject it, saying that she was surprised to heard our allegation. But I can give you some fact, and you will see whether you were surprised or not, or you just astonished or angry with what the government did. Actually, it happened twice in 1 month time. On the 10th of August, the government have issued, the day that the astronauts come to Hong Kong, you know that there will be, using up lots of pages or airtime and even our crew. But then, Paul Chan, the Secretary for Development, have been shy away from media for a week, and suddenly called the media, have a stand up at 6:30, saying that to clarify his subdivided flats in his house. And then at 8:30 p.m. at the same night, the government informed the media that the declaration of interest of the EXO has been open to public scrutiny. That means you have to rush online and scrutinize the feet height paper to see whether any problem with the declaration of the interest of the EXCO. So put all this, we have a controversy event at the same time. The intention is clear. They're trying to, to minimize the media's coverage on those issues. And more important, that day is Friday, which means there will be no freebies on the street because it is Saturday. And that means what? That means around 3 million readers will be out of touch. So that is that kind of tactics have been used by the government, and this has been used more and more.
A lot of tactics.
And also, and another one is on the 31st August. That is why we issue. That's why we complain, because it's not just the first time. It's the second time in 1 month time they try to do this. On the same time, they call
but
for
Carrie,
four.
But when Carrie addressed it, it was certainly. We can talk about tactics, but we're talking about self-censorship, and certainly this is something that is pervasive in terms of what is happening on the ground. And I just want to move the conversation to Paul Mooney, because you bring up a lot of great points. And Paul Mooney, as a journalist for South China Morning Post, he wrote his first article for the newspaper in 1990, some 22 years ago. He is one of the most winningest staff reporters there. And when he sat down with the new editor-in-chief, Wen Jianwei, he was told his contract would no longer be renewed. And Paul, you were not surprised one bit. Tell us why.
Well, for a while, I had been having trouble getting stories in the paper. I was brought in by Reg Chua and David Legu when they took over leadership of the paper. But I knew that there'd been a problem. I'd worked for the Post before, about 7 or 8 years earlier. There have been problems with the China editor, who was Wang Xiaowei, and I knew that once Reg and David left, and I knew that they would eventually leave, that I would be not far behind them. So Reg left, I believe, in March last year, and David left in August. After David left, from August to January, I didn't have one story in the newspaper. I had one story, eventually, was on panda bears. But more than 20 other suggestions I had made on political or human rights or social justice stories, the thing that I specialized in, were all rejected. I went from late August until late January with one story in the paper. By the time I left the paper in May, I had only had two stories on the China pages. I was reduced to writing restaurant reviews and hotel reviews because I couldn't get onto the China pages. Again, I wasn't the only one. This problem, goes back a bit longer. It goes back at least 12 years of the South China Morning Post censorship. I think it's getting worse now. There's more examples, but You can look at the case of Liu Xiaoying, who won the Lorenzo Natale award for reporting on Taisha Village in Guangdong in 2006. She was let go in 2007 after having disagreements with Wang Xiangwei, who was the China editor, and after apparently, according to the Asian Wall Street Journal, after the Guangdong provincial government put pressure on the newspaper. Several other people have kind of also gone in the wake of that. I suggested a story after Reg left on Chinese rights lawyers who were being abused, kidnapped, tortured. The China desk said no, aren't interested. I suggested it to David Lager. He said, go ahead and do it. I wrote it. It sat on the China desk for 3 months, didn't run. I later learned that this was a tactic that was used to keep sensitive stories out or to reduce the impact of those stories. It eventually ran, but by the time it ran, it was quite late, and the story had almost petered out. Interviewed Gung He, the wife of Gao Zhisheng, the human rights lawyer who disappeared. I was traveling in the U.S. I interviewed her. China just said, well, go ahead and do it. Later that day, I was told that Wang Xiangwei had spiked the story. It wasn't going to run. So there I was, working for the paper for about 9 months, and getting a generous salary, but I couldn't get any stories into the newspaper. I did have some stories in the magazine, but the magazine was outside the purview of the editor at the time. So, again, I wrote the only thing. But if you talk to the Hong Kong reporters, you'll find out that the China reporters working here in Beijing, who are all pretty experienced, you'll find a lot of the same stories are being censored, or in many cases, being told to write more positive stories. To me, it's a worrisome trend. What worries me a bit more, though, is just censorships. Censorships, a worrisome problem now in Hong Kong. But there's also a practice that people may not notice, and that's basically slipping propaganda or distorted stories into the newspaper. We did a story. Sao Chan already posted a story during Tibetan New Year, saying that basically in Lhasa, Tibetans would be happy. The self-immolation had no impact. Quoted some a guy named, a middle-aged Tibetan man. Who said everybody was happy and celebrated that New Year. We don't know who this guy is. We don't have anyone in Lhasa. How did we find this guy? He's basically saying, "Oh, I'm going to spend 10,000 RMB on fireworks and wine to celebrate Tibetan New Year." In reality, Lhasa is under lockdown. The mood is very bad. Why do we run a story like this? Then we did an interview with the Chinese Panchen Lama. The Panchen Lama, which was by the Dalai Lama, was kidnapped as a young boy. A kind of very flattering interview. Not only maybe one serious. So here's a man who's not probably ever been appeared in the Western media before, never been interviewed before, and we basically wasted by asking silly questions. I also find troublesome. I mentioned this to a colleague at the paper, and she said to me, well, Wang Xiangwei, he's got to be careful with Tibet stories. And this really shocked me, because would the New York Times say this? Would the Times of London say this? Would Mingbao say it? And I don't think in media, we're not Xinhua, China Daily, we're not the People's Daily, we're not Guangming Ribao. We don't have to worry about what we write, as long as what we write is the truth. And it's worrisome to me that Hong Kong experienced seasoned reporters have this sense that now we have to be careful about what we write. It's a very worrisome trend. We also ran stories saying, before Bo Xilai left, saying that Bo Xilai was safe, his career was okay. Then did a story kind of saying how honest he was, when everyone knows that he was quite corrupt. So this was a trend that I saw happening in the paper that worries me. And I look every morning, I get the headlines sent from the paper. And the China headlines was 4 or 5 every day. Before, all 4 or 5 were interesting. Now, 3 or 4 of them are very soft pieces. So I think you could see that the quality of coverage in the South China Morning Post has slipped as a result of this kind of censorship and attempts to get kind of positive pieces into the newspaper. So I worry. I think that South China Post does critical coverage. Credit goes to the reporters in Hong Kong and Beijing. We work very hard to do this. I have great respect for them, but they're under pressure from the management, to do less, do positive stories, let's do less human rights, and it's not a positive way to work. I think that the paper's been around for more than 100 years and always served Hong Kong well, and I think it's a shame that that it you know, today that reporters are being hamstrung in their reporting. You know, the newspaper doesn't have the status it used to have, and I'm starting to feel that it will never will, that we've turned a corner, and I think this is a shame, but, you know, Hong Kong readers are intelligent, they deserve something better.
Paul Mooney, thank you. We talked, we asked Wong Xiangwei, South China Morning Post editor-in-chief, to come to our panel tonight to address the group and to talk with us about it. He politely declined, saying the best way to respond to critics is to put out a better paper. I want to bring in Albert Cheng, DBC founder. You know Albert, many of you know Albert as Taipan, but he is in this most recent fight that the survival of DBC, he's fighting for the survival of that. Politics at play at DBC, this is digital broadcasting, and he says it's bad news for press freedom. Albert?
Thank you. English is not my working language. I speak Cantonese every day for the last 25 years, I'm making a living. I hope everyone knows the translation. Miss Mac have make a speech for 10 minutes. It matters. DBC is not in her agenda. She's the passive of HKJA. Talking about censorship. The reporters in Hong Kong are called defendants. The reporters are the court defendants. Hong Kong reporters rely on the government to feed them the news. If the government don't feed them the news, they cry. There's no investigative reporting in Hong Kong. I'm a very popular talk show host in Hong Kong for the last 20 years. I'm not popular among the media organization or among our peer groups, obviously. I just prove it to you. I started as a talk show host on radio from 1995 when Hong Kong turned over to the Communist China. It was in 1997, obviously, we all know about it. I last exactly 14 months, I was attacked in front of the radio station, 6 o'clock in the morning. I was sent to the hospital, and I stayed there for 2 months. And these are last 15 months. Let's remember that. And then after I resumed my program, in 1999, they finally shut me off in 2004. So from 1999 to 2004, that's another 5 years. And then I was fired by commercial radio. I was their number one talk show host. My 2 hour program generated $100 million a year in revenue, advertising revenue for the radio station. And they fired me. They sent me a letter and say my service is no longer required. That's it. And then I'm unemployed as a talk show host. Would that happen in any other countries? No. So I ran for office. Become a legislative councillor. And I was the panel chairman of the broadcasting and technology panel. And I pushed for open sky. So finally the government going to issue the digital radio broadcasting license. So I applied for it. It took me 4 years to apply a license. So finally we get off the ground. And I resumed to host my program on May 15th, it lasts only 2 months. My shareholders said they were told by the liaison office they have to shut the radios down. Now, if you rely on the local newspapers, if you rely on the local media, they will tell you this is a shareholder dispute. This is a losing proposition. My shareholder don't want to put in any more money. Is that true? Do our reporters do any investigative reporting? Do they take out any documents online from PA? When we applied for the license, we committed to invest $620 million in 12 years. So far, we have invested $150 million. My shareholder refused to put up the funding they're supposed to. And my shareholders are David Lee, Arthur Lee, Mr. Alan Wong of VTech, and Mr. Wong Chow Bill from Shenzhen. They're all CCPP, whatever. I'm sorry. I'm the one to brand. I find them as my partners because David Lee is a very good friend of mine. But they betray us. They hold 50% of the company. Between myself, Morris Holt, the founding CEO of Next Media Group, and Nono Hakuri, we hold 40% of the company. Now, they want to shut us down. They want to declare bankruptcy. And I said, why don't we put up the money? Between Morris and myself and Nono Hakuri. No, after he said, no, sorry. We don't want to be diluted. I'd rather to cut my loss down and make it zero. Now, does that make any business sense? No. But what's reported on the local news? Albert Chang have dispute with their shareholders. Digital broadcasting and losing proposition. Nobody want to invest the money anymore. That's the story you read on the newspaper. Last Friday, Cordia was there. Our listeners organized a candlelight gathering, packed the whole Cheddar Garden. I would say at least 5,000 people attend. No newspaper report. Only three newspapers. One Apple Daily in their core supporters. They say 1,000 people attend. South China Morning Post, they say 1,000 people attend. If you can find the news. Hong Kong Economic Journal, they say few thousand people attend. So the Hong Kong Economic Journal is a little bit more fair. And then if you watch cable and now, they report it on the entertainment channel. Cable said 500 people attend. What happened today, a radio station just started, not even 3 months old, formally launched my program, and we're gonna shut down. Nobody give a damn. In 2004, when I was fired, they make headline news. And then last year, two most popular talk show hosts, Mr. Robert Chow, in the morning talk show, and Zi Sam on the evening talk show, both was fired by Radio Hong Kong. They didn't make any news. Well, literally, let's say little. You know why? Because they don't like Robert Chow. Robert is supposed to be pro-establishment. And Zi Sam, same as me, we're being very critical. And Zi Sam's being very critical to the government. Now, it's a change. The people in RTHK, they're very happy that they get rid of Robert Chow. So they're willing to sacrifice Zi Sam. Now, what kind of deal is? I don't like Robert. I know him many years. I don't like him. He's my competitor. You know, I'm criticizing him every day. He took me to court once. But I think we still have to defend him. Sam's people don't like me. Because I was nicknamed the Bowtie Pin for last 8 years since Donald became the chief executive. But so what? It's talking about a radio station being shut down, employing over 100 employees. And we're shutting down. Now, yes, we can blame the media. Yes, the media is self-censorship. But what happened to those people? Those newspapers say Apple Daily, Woman Power. They don't care to report it. How about the reporters? They don't like me. Now Albert Chang, forget about him. He's one of those guys. He's the guy with the GPS. He's the guy with the medal. He's the guy with the money to invest. He found those guys, let him die. Screw him, so what? Now I have a small feature movie. I make it today, I want to present it to you. Please.
Actually, you know what, Albert, I'd love to show it, but we've run short on time, so I really want to give our platform to our other guests.
Please let me show the movie. It's only 3 minutes. Where the flowers are.
Long time ago, where have all the flowers gone? Young girls pick them every one when. Will they ever learn? When will they ever learn?
I think we get the point. Thank you, Albert.
Come on.
No, this is time management. This is time management.
I'm sorry, Albert.
But you know what? I'm trying to respect the time of our other panelists as well. I'm fascinated by what you're saying. I actually want to hear from our audience as well.